That's right. You know, a lot of people in Indiana are thinking it's not baseball season. It is so not baseball season, but it's coming up. It'll be here quicker than you will know it. And in honor of that, we are going to talk with Tom DeMichel. He is the author of Baseball FAQ, All That's Left to Know About America's Pastime. He's written a lot of other books. We're going to get to some of those as well. It's Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN with my producer Dan Chigrou and Esmeralda Leon. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. And the author is Tom DeMichel. Let's welcome him to the show. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. My pleasure, man. Boy, you sound like Rich Coase.
Actually, there's a slight connection. He went to Maine East, I went to Maine South.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Does everybody talk the same?
Well, if you end up on WMTH, which is the old radio station there, I guess you do, yeah.
Wow. Boy, doesn't he sound like Rich Coase?
Uncanny.
It's kind of scary. Okay. Are you sure this isn't Rich Coase just pulling a joke?
Well, let me check. No, it's Tom DeMichel.
Okay, well, welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you.
I really enjoy the book, and before we get to baseball FAQ, well, first of all, tell everybody about this series. This is the third FAQ book that you've written, correct?
Right, and they have probably close to 60 or 65 titles, maybe even more, in the FAQ series. And ironically, and please keep me to the short end of the stick here, but ironically, when I first heard about the series, FAQ, of course, refers to frequently asked questions.
Right.
And, you know, I thought that the format might be very much a kind of a dry question and answer sort of format, and it really isn't that way at all. And I think they're playing on the idea of FAQ being FAQ, almost like a fact kind of thing. But In any case, I mean, they've done everything with a lot of musical acts, a lot of pop culture things, films. They're getting into some things like cocktails FAQ and beer FAQ. So they're doing an awful lot of things that involve things that people are interested in, things that people like.
Yeah, I really love the series. I've had several authors on who have written books for the FAQ series, and I really think they're great. I do want to mention some of the other books that you've written. You were on with Bill Leff a couple of years ago,
sure.
4 years ago.
Yeah, I remember it well, very, very much.
About the James Bond FAQ book that you wrote.
And well, I've been fortunate, and without, you know, jumping the gun here, I like to really like, I like to write books about things that I'm very passionate about, and the Bond films are something that I was always crazy about. I can remember seeing Thunderball at around 10 years old and just really amazed at the kind of action, the excitement on the screen. And let's face it, and as you well know, Nick, that, you know, films take us away from whatever's going on for a couple of hours. And Bond was exactly that kind of, you know, I don't want to say mindless entertainment, but it was just great fun. And when the opportunity came for me to be able to write a book about all those great films, who wouldn't? So
yeah.
I was very fortunate.
You know, there was a time when we didn't have seven or eight blockbuster action-packed movies a summer. There was a time when it all led up to Bond. You know what I mean? That was the action event movie of whatever year it was.
Exactly, and the anticipation was great. Whatever was going to be the next Bond film, yeah, everybody was really waiting for it.
Yeah.
Now you get in line. A quick aside, I can't even remember what I went to see a couple weeks ago, and the coming attractions, which are always fun to watch, but every one of the, I think, maybe six or seven coming attractions were nothing but CG filled films, and I don't have any problem with CG. That's a very important process that helps take us to another world, of course. But you know, where's the stories, guys? You know, and the thing about the Bond films, of course, is they at least began, the first five or six films were basically established with the great stories that Ian Fleming had written in the 50s.
Right, exactly.
You know,
I was just going to say, what did you think of Spectre?
Well, you know, a lot of people had a lot of different thoughts about that, and Skyfall was very strong. I still believe that Casino Royale did a wonderful job of, again, rebooting, as they always seem to do when they need to get a new Bond. But the idea there with Spectre is that we're you know, we're seeing a very bitter and somewhat angry Bond, and Spectre helps to carry that through. And the casting of Christoph Waltz is
it's
a spoiler, folks.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, it's the movie came out a while ago.
Exactly. To reintroduce Blofeld after all these years is a wonderful thing to see, and I can't think of a better performer, a greater actor than Christoph Waltz to do that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I was disappointed with it, though, Tom. I got to tell you, I wasn't crazy about it. And I'm hoping that Christoph Waltz is used better in the next one.
Well, I would agree with you on that too, Nick. I don't think it rose to the occasion like, for example, Casino Royale 10 or 11 years ago. So it probably could use some tweaking, but then not everything. You know, the guys don't always crank one out of the park, you know, when they're up to the plate. So.
Oh, look at that. Look at that reference you just did.
I'm going to charge you extra for that.
that was good, man. That was real. But before we, because we're going to break here for the news in a couple of minutes, and then when we come back, we'll jump into the book and some more stuff. When did you start writing, Tom, and when did that become a passion for you?
I think I was able to write my name at the age of 4 and a half, if I'm not mistaken. But that's not really what you're asking. No, in actuality, I think the first book I wrote was about 20-some years ago, and it was about the Three Stooges, which, again, passionate. What can I say?
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for a poke in the eyes. Yeah. So I started with that, and that actually had been a series of notes that I had started perhaps seriously in the late 70s, and then about 15 years later, I had the chance to get that first book published, and then it's kind of rolled on for the last 20 or 25 years.
You write, I'm looking at your list of credits here, and you write about a lot of stuff, a lot of really fun stuff, and a lot of stuff that I happen to have big interest in, too.
And a lot of people, I hope, but yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah. And I also want to mention, you wrote a book on the Three Stooges. I am in the minority, Tom.
Okay.
I am a Shemp guy.
Oh, please. Are you kidding? I'm right with you on that. He is incredibly funny. He is incredibly, and they say that off camera he was the most funniest of the most funniest. He was the funniest of the Stooges.
Yeah.
And you can see it. So many of his ad-libs were left in, and to me they're dynamite stuff.
My favorite Stooges short of all time, and I always forget the title of it, it's where they're tailors and Terry Hargan comes in and
right, most likely would sing a song of Sixpence.
That's my favorite Stooge episode, a short of all time. Every bit, and you mentioned Shemp. Shemp is particularly hysterical in that one.
He's a grown man sitting there reading comics and amusing himself exactly. It's a wordless gag that is amazingly funny.
Yeah, I got six wives and two kids. That's also
exactly. We're going to be paupers. Are you kidding? We're not even married. It's just one line after another.
Oh, I love that one, man. Okay, Tom, hang on. Okay.
Sure, Nick.
Okay, there we go. Tom DeMichael is with us. We got a lot in common, and he's written some other books. And he also wrote a book about game shows. We'll get to the baseball book, I swear to God. He wrote a book about game shows. He also wrote a book about sci-fi movies. I have a screening of John Carpenter's The Thing coming up in a couple of weeks, so we have to talk about that. But baseball FAQ is the latest. But no, we'll get to that right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. They are actually the odds on favorite to win the World Series this year. I can't believe that sentence just came out of my mouth. oh, man. Hi, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. My guest is Tom DeMichael. He's the author of Baseball FAQ, All That's Left to Know About America's Pastime. And let's welcome Tom back to the show. Hey, Tom.
Yes.
Are you as surprised as everybody else is that, everybody is predicting the Cubs to make it to the World Series this year and win over 100 games?
No, I think we're seeing the results, the fruits of a certain president and general manager, the endeavors that they have done the right way. I mean, Epstein came to town with a formula that he had proven in Boston and has basically done the same thing and has done it well. I'm not surprised. But if anyone, and please don't misunderstand, I am a huge Cubs fan, but I am also, quite obviously, I would say, a huge baseball fan.
Right.
I mean, you know, I love the White Sox. I love the Yankees. Sorry, folks, but I think tradition in itself. You know, how can you not? But I love a lot of the teams out there. I think they're very interesting. But the point being that with the Cubs finally getting their due, I have watched them through thick or thin, like some fans, most fans. 1976, our only All-Star representative was catcher Steve Swisher, ladies and gentlemen, who probably hit around 245 that year, and
right.
That merited All-Star consideration. But to your question, they certainly have positioned themselves. But if you've ever been to the racetrack, you know that until the horse crosses the finish line, there are no winners. I'm a realist. I think that they're incredibly well positioned. They're very balanced to do what they haven't done in several millennium, it seems. But
I got to say, I've been a Cub fan my whole life. I grew up six blocks away from Wrigley, right on Addison. So I've been a Cubs fan my entire life, and it was so much fun to watch that team last year. As soon as Theo Epstein came here, I have a friend who was from Boston, lifetime Sox fan from Boston,
mm-hmm.
and told me that when Theo came here, he said the Cubs, this was his prediction, was the Cubs will be in the World Series by 2015. And that was literally like right after Theo got to the city. My friend said that. He was off, but last season was unbelievable.
And it was right. It went beyond a lot of people's expectations. They were saying maybe 82, 84 wins, something like that. And to come up with 97 they did, and to go as deep into the playoffs as they did, it was so satisfying to watch as far as I'm concerned. Now, I don't want to sound like a thirsty man who's happy for a couple of drops of water. I mean, I've been up and down with the Cubs, and we've actually, when you look at it historically, the last, you know, couple of decades, we have been able to make it into playoffs on I wouldn't say a regular basis, certainly not like the Cardinals or the Yankees, but, you know, we were there in, the 03 or so, and 90, 98, and a number of those years where we were able to go into the playoffs, so it's not like that terrible run that the Pirates had for 20-plus years.
Right. Well, I got to say that maybe with the exception of last season, 2008 to me was the best team that they fielded since 84.
It was strong.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that was the most disappointing. To get swept by the Dodgers, I mean, I was beside myself. I was that was like one of the biggest disappointments for me. Ever. But I still remember breaking furniture in 1984, and to this day, if I were to see Steve Garvey walking down the street, I'd punch him right in the face.
Well, there's many, many stories to be told about that. A lot of things that I could have put into the book that you run out of time and space. But, the 84 season was certainly, the one thing about Cubs fan is that being a Cubs fan is it builds an awful lot of character, and I've got more character than I know what to do with. So, it's true. I mean, you have to, it makes you grow up quick, and year after year, you just sit there and going, well, it's an okay team, it's a good team, it's a terrible team, but for me, and probably for you, you stick with them. So,
yeah, no question about it. Well, let's talk about the book. It's a terrific book, Tom. It really is.
Thank you.
How hard was it to decide what to put in and what to leave out? And was the structure of the book always the way that you had intended it, the way it turned out?
Yes, it was. The structure was pretty much that way. And one of the early taglines that I kind of conceived, the concept of the FAQ books, and not just my titles, but all of them, I think, is to try and encompass so many facets of a particular topic or subject or again, band or whoever it might be. And that's really difficult. You have to understand that the book has been, I had completed the book actually last June. June. In other words, the manuscript was done then.
Hmm.
And I, to this day, I'm still thinking, oh, gosh, I wish I had put that in there. So there are so many things along the way where I had to say, you know, I'd like to talk about this. I'd like to talk about that. There are players. There are games. There are situations that I wanted to write about that you just have to say, no, it really takes me down this road. And by going down this road, we're ending up with a 500-page book or a 600-page book or whatever. So you have to be somewhat disciplined to be able to say, I really need to stay toward the core. And as I said, one of the taglines that I kind of came up with is that this was essentially part history book, part reference guide, part instructional manual, and part bathroom buddy. I mean, the idea is that it tries to encompass all of those things. And to share real quickly, I have a great friend who I played ball with for years, played a lot of 12-inch with him for years, and he gave me some input while I was working with the book. And he called me the other night because I had given him a copy, and he said, he darts in and out, and the concept, as I see it, is that the book does not need to be read linearly from front to back cover. You can step in, you can enjoy a particular section, you can step in and read a couple of pages here and there, and then step back out. And that makes it, you know, an easy read in a lot of different situations.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a great way of looking at it, Tom. I received the book recently, so I wasn't able to read the whole thing. But because of the way it is structured, it was random. I went through and I read, you know, many parts of the book because it's not linear. I do want to mention really quickly one of the chapters. One of my favorite chapters is the beating the best baseball bar baseball bets. Where you provide crazy answers to great answers to crazy questions. And I can't tell you the number of times when I've been with friends and things like that, and we start placing bets and throwing stuff out. How did you come up with some of the questions for this one?
Well, again, the opening of that chapter, I will confess that I actually created a scenario of a fictitious softball team sitting around discussing with great vigor certain facets of the game and that sort of thing. And then
I got to tell you, Tom, I'm a little disappointed that those guys and their nicknames weren't real.
Let's put it this way. They're very close to being real.
Okay.
Those are a bunch of jamokes that I played with about 20-some years ago. And, obviously that was probably pretty obvious. But the point being is that's how it came about, is that we would always sit around and you have a bunch of testosterone-filled guys who think they really know the game. And so what ends up happening is you've got these guys saying, what about this, what about that? Hey, I got one for you, blah, blah, blah. And before you know it, you know, you come up with these sort of interesting, strange questions that some people pick up on, some people don't. And, certainly the one thing that I didn't want this to become was a trivia book. While it does have elements of that, trivia is perhaps just what it is, and that's trivial, you know. So I don't want to go into nitpicking, but there's a lot of interesting things that came to mind and things that I think are quite interesting that I included in that particular chapter.
Yeah. I also love the in that chapter that you have you break down some players' names into different categories.
Again, that was just an amusing thing that it actually struck me probably 20 or 30 years ago, where I looked at the fact of, I can remember maybe even longer than 30 years ago, I kept thinking about games that or names, ball players who had names that involved economy and money and stuff like that. And in those days, you had Don Money, who I think was with the Brewers, if I recall, and that sort of thing. But then I came up obviously with Ernie Banks, Norm Cash,
right.
Bobby Bonds, you know, all those types of things. Brad Penny. I started playing around with names that would all apply to, things you might find in a bank or whatever. So, yeah, it's that kind of thing, just playing around with some ideas.
Yeah, it's really funny. I particularly like the players that could make you hungry.
Yeah, right. Herman Franks, one of my boy. Herman Franks, and I made a comment where I can recall in the late 70s when he was managing and just, you know, the idea of – again, one of the rare things about baseball is you actually have the field manager wearing a uniform of the team.
Yeah.
And Herman, I can't imagine anybody going into the locker room and saying, give me one that doesn't fit, but that must have been what he was doing, because Herman would come out and it didn't suit him well at all.
No, the vivid memories that I have of Herman Franks, because, you know, I mean, I grew up, I'm 50, so Herman Franks was like the first manager of the Cubs that I vividly remember knowing, you know. And I just remember him. He was a fan of kicking dirt on umps.
Yes.
He was a big fan of that, and I am too. I think that's a great thing. So many other things in now you do cover baseball movies in a chapter here.
Right, and that comes from first of all my own love and interest and affection for movies in general, cinema, and then also the fact that there have been some absolutely tremendous films that, you know, surrounded the game of baseball, that have celebrated the game, plus and or minus, but you know, the fact that they celebrate this, and I you know, don't make it too much of the American pastime, but it is, of course, there's a whole chapter that devotes to the obvious films like Field of Dreams or The Natural, those, you know, really good films, but then I also, very few people have seen Safe at Home.
I've never even heard of it, Tom, until I saw that in your book.
Seriously, it's one of those things. I think it might run maybe around 75 minutes. And to me, it's a kick to see Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris right after that great 61 season where they had, you know, they were trying to break Babe Ruth's record. And the fact that the setup of the story, folks, if you're interested, is Safe at Home involves this kid and his father who live in Florida. The kid's a huge baseball fan, and he tells his kid's friends on the baseball team that he knows Mickey Mantle. And, of course, they don't believe him, and, of course, he's lying. So he ends up going to Yankees spring training to try and convince Mickey to tell his friends, yes, he actually does know him, even though he doesn't. It's certainly an excuse to see Maris and Mantle and those kinds of guys. And the payoff is, of course, is that, you know, Mick says you can't, you know, you shouldn't lie to your friends and all that kind of stuff, that great Oklahoma drawl, you know. And but in any case, yeah, it's an amusing film, and somehow William Frawley ends up in it like he ends up in every film.
In that chapter also, I was pleased to see that you included Baseball Bugs, the Bugs Bunny short, which is one of my favorites of all time.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and again, you know, I think I related to the fact that because of Baseball Bugs, I can remember being on some softball teams where it was like that particular scene where they are lined up in a queue just going from base to base as one hitter after another is just rattling the ball, bang, bang, bang. And while they're playing, like a samba or a tango type music, and we used to look at each other on the bench and go, this is it. It's Baseball Bugs all over again.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Yeah, it's a great chapter. It's a lot of fun. Tom, hang on, okay?
Of course.
Okay, Tom DeMichiel is with us, and he is the author of Baseball FAQ. It's his latest book, All That's Left to Know About America's Pastime. It's a terrific book. If you're a baseball fan, you should definitely check it out and get it. And we have a link on our Facebook page to get the book, and you should check it out. It's a great book. And that's facebook.com/NickDShow. Like us as well. All right, we'll be back right after this. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio. I'm your overnight guy, 720 WGN. Ah, yes. White Sox used to play that one all the time. And we're talking baseball. Tom DeMichiel is with me. He is the author of Baseball FAQ, All That's Left to Know About America's Pastime. We have a link on our Facebook page for you to get the book, and you should get it because it's terrific. Facebook.com/NickDShow. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
I've been watching, I don't know if you have, I have religiously been watching the Johnny Carson reruns on Antenna TV.
I catch them occasionally, yeah. I'm glad to see them back on.
It's my morning ritual, Tom. I get home in the morning after work.
Sure.
And I watch last night's episode. And it's and the memories come rushing back, and it's so much fun. The reason I bring this up is because a few nights ago, in an episode that was in the, I want to say mid-70s, maybe 76 or so, he had Charlie O'Finley on. That's a fantastic reaction. And the segment was spectacular. For people who don't know, tell everybody who Charlie Finley was.
Charlie Finley was a man who owned the Athletics back when they were originally in Kansas City, and then, of course, when they moved to Oakland. He was a very rich man, having made his money, I believe, if I recall, in the insurance world, and was, you know, if you take out your Funkin' Wagnalls and take a look at the word eccentric, you'll see the picture of Charlie Finley next to it. He was the guy who wanted to have a little basket rise up out of the ground with balls for the umpire. He had goats past the right field fence grazing during a game. He actually wanted to, when we're talking about elevators, he wanted to deliver the relief pitchers by actually having them come up directly from under the mound. He was an interesting man and very. He obviously loved the game, but he was also very arrogant, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. That came through, Tom, big time during the interview.
Very unusual person.
And also, I mean, I guess we could kind of blame him for the designated hitter.
Yes, although that had been played around with for a while, but Finley tried to introduce Orn, and I actually had one around here somewhere a few years ago, but he introduced the orange ball, or tried to introduce an orange ball.
That's what, Tom.
Stitches.
He brought a bunch of them with him to Johnny Carson's show.
Right around that time.
Exactly, around that time, and started to throw them to the audience to prove that they were easier to hit and catch.
They didn't have a bat with them, did they?
No, they did not.
Well, there you go. You know, that's an example. Yeah, how are you going to hit them without a bat? But, yeah, he was an unusual fellow, definitely, and. At times tried to make himself bigger than the game, you know, in terms of the players and what was going on the field.
I do want to mention, Tom, like right at the beginning of the book and the intro to the book, this book is not just about pro baseball. And you talk about a really wonderful experience about going to a lot of the minor league parks and having a great time there. And you talk about that. And I'm glad that you mentioned that in this book, because the book is about the game.
It's something that I have found incredibly satisfying over the last probably 35 years. I've been fortunately married for 30 years to a wonderful woman. I don't know why she stays with me, but that's for another night, I guess.
Yeah.
But in any case, our first date was to a Cubs game in July of 83, where they were still kind of had a hard time figuring
out. Lee Elia, yeah.
Exactly. and anyway, there's a long story with Lee. And there's something that I had to leave out, even though that whole Lee Elia tirade back in 82, 83, where he was just really angry at he was angry at everything.
Yeah.
But in any case, back to the story. I'm sorry, I'm digressing.
No, go ahead.
The idea of before we got married and after we got married, great weekends were had for my wife and myself by going out to some minor league game. I would plot out perhaps two or three different stadiums across Illinois or into Wisconsin or, you know, just in the Midwest, to where you would go, and the idea, and I mentioned in the book the fact that the beauty of the scope of the game, the beauty of the breadth of it, is the fact that you can, and I mentioned, of course, that you can go to Yankee Stadium and their Legends Suite seats are something like, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 a ticket, and a game for a family of four is going to cost you around, I don't know, you know, $6,500, or if you wanted to go to, say, North Carolina and a minor league team, you might spend about $70 for a family of four. And what I was trying to point out there was the fact that there is such a broad spectrum of game to be enjoyed, and minor leagues is one way of doing it. The Chicagoland area has a couple of great major league teams, but they also have a number of great minor league teams in the area that you can go out and have a great evening or weekend and not have to go to the bank for it.
Yeah. And you talk about how it's unique to baseball that when you go to these, you know, the farm systems are pretty much unique to baseball, and that you're going to see some future stars.
Yes. You know, I can remember going to the Richmond Braves. Again, my wife and I were dating at the time, and we happened to be on the East Coast. And we were in Richmond, Virginia, and had a chance to go see the Braves. And there were a number of players, of course, because the Braves had such a strong series of teams in the 90s. In the mid-80s, we were seeing, and unfortunately, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know that we saw a number of ball players that became big stars in the 90s with the Braves. And here you are seeing these up-and-coming hungry players who are playing, you know, I don't mean to over-romanticize it, but they're playing for the love of the game because they're only making a few bucks,
right,
you know, monthly. And it's very common in minor leagues to have host families. You know, if you have a team in town, the kids can't afford to get their own apartment or whatever, so they try and find a host family who will actually support that player, give them a room and board kind of thing for
right.
the season.
Right.
It's a great example of, you know, of the beauty of the game. And no, I mean, you know, football and basketball specifically really don't have any kind of minor league structure. You come basically from college right into the game.
Yeah.
Hockey has kind of adapted somewhat of a minor league structure and system, but yeah, baseball truly unique,
right?
And we can thank Branch Rickey for basically establishing that whole idea of the, you know, we always think of Branch Rickey when it comes to Jackie Robinson and so forth, but Branch Rickey back in the early 20s was with the Cardinals organization and really didn't do well as a player, and he came up with this idea of affiliating a number of teams minor league to help feed the major league team, and that concept basically built the minor league system that we know as it runs today.
Well, listen, Tom, a real pleasure having you on the show. I want you to come back anytime, but I would specifically like you to come back so we can talk game shows.
Well, Nick, I would love that. I mean, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm so pleased to have you back with us, and God bless you on that too, man.
Oh,
so
thanks, Tom.
It's a real pleasure, but I enjoy your work. I enjoy what you do. And let's face it, I'm a motor mouth. You know, I was, as Groucho Marx used to say, I must have been vaccinated with a phonograph needle because I just go on and on.
No, and it's
a pleasure. Thank you.
No, it's a great talking to you, Tom. And keep in touch. Dan will get a hold of you, and we'll get you back on soon, okay?
Super, Nick. Thanks very much.
Take care, buddy.
Right.
There you go. Tom DeMichel. We got to take a break. We got the news coming up next. His book is called Baseball FAQ, Facebook.com/Nick D Show.